is.
Hey, have you seen his Instagram?
They need
this Felger and Mass.
They don't use crack enough.
On 98.5.
Yeah, not really.
The Sports Hub.
How important is it to kind of build off what you guys were able to do on Sunday against a very, very good Minnesota team?
Yeah, it's huge to come back this week and start practicing, get back out in the field, start building that chemistry for the upcoming game. But, I mean, we're just focused on the Vikings, and we're just doing what we got to do every week and just build up the practices every day right now and just execute like we always do during the week to get prepared.
How important is that to you with your health and everything to, you know, take focus in? You say it's cliche all the time, but that one day at a time, get through practice, feel good about practice and go.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when you're not out there all the time, and when you get back, you want to start building them together. You want to start building up the practices and just get your feet under you, get all the calls down exactly to a T so you feel confident out there.
All right, so that was Bob Gronkowski on Wednesday talking about how important it is to get back out there and feel good and start building these practices and the reps and how that translates to how you are on the field on Sunday. It all felt good, looked good, because on Wednesday, for the first time all year, he wasn't listed on the injury report with anything. Full participant, no ankle, no back, all set to go. He does his press conference, feeling good, looking good, starting to stack these on top of each other, and here we go. Next day, limited injury report, back on there with an ankle and a back. What the hell?
Yeah, look, to me, I think this is what it is now with Gronk. Like, first of all, I don't know that he's ever going to be right, at least this year.
But what do you think happened?
Typo or a lie, that's all.
Typo or a lie. So why would they lie on Wednesday just to put him on Thursday? What gain is there?
No, I think that it flared up.
The ankle and the back?
Yeah.
Together?
Sure.
No. Wow, both, ow. It's just like, how? How does that happen?
So you think it's a lie?
Well, I don't know how he comes on with both a day later. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's a lie. Meaning,
I think both these things are chronic.
But wait, so what I mean is, I think that they took him off on Wednesday because you're fine, Gronk. And then on Thursday, he said, I'm hurt. And so they put him back on. Now, is Gronkowski making it up? No, but I think it begins and ends with him. I think the team is ready to say, all right, Rob, here we go. We know you're not 100% who is, but it's now the stretch run. We've gave you a full month, and now let's go. And my guess is that he's a little hesitant to say full go, I'm 100%, for whatever reason, and I don't know what that reason is.
Maybe he's saving his bullets for games. I think his issues are chronic. I don't think they're the kinds of things that go away. I mean, the back clearly is. Like, he's had that for years, right? And this whole idea that one back injury is not related to another, like, or, you know, I hate that. They're always related, for crying out loud. When you have a problem area like that, it never goes away. As for the ankle, I mean, look, I don't know what it is. You've heard all kind of whispers, stuff being thrown out during the course of the year that it was an Achilles.
Achilles, yeah.
So if that's it, that's not going to... He's going to go out there and play? Like, that's going to go away?
So then you think taking him off on Wednesday was a lie?
Or a typo.
Typo.
Probably. Yeah, probably. I mean, it could be... I guess what I'm saying
I think, like,
your scenario is entirely plausible.
I think they're trying to nudge him. I think they're in this space with him again now where... Well, they, you know, the incentives are there to nudge him, but he's not going to hit the incentives. So now we're back to square one with, you know, what does Team Gronkowski think about him playing? And so I don't know, maybe they're just trying to, maybe that's a little bit of a message send that, nope, you've been cleared. You're 100%. I mean, it leaks out last week with Bedard and others that it's been up to him whether he plays or not. And now it's, well, you're not even hurt. So I don't know. They've done this in the past.
So if he doesn't play, I'll be surprised.
Me too.
Like, so I expect him to play.
But I just think this,
so maybe, you might be right.
This little cat and mouse game, and I don't know exactly the nature of it, but it's just curious, you know, that he's finally off, and then the next day he's back on with both? So did someone hit him in the back and roll on his ankle? That's what I'm talking. I mean, that's what
no,
I mean.
No,
it's
I
like,
hear,
how you
yeah,
come
yeah.
on with both?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, when you put it that way.
I mean, if it's really on the up and up, I think it's, he strains his back reaching for a pass, and he's on with the back. Or someone rolls on his ankle and he's back on with the ankle. How did he get both?
So I didn't focus on the part of it that's the interplay between him and them. Because I think when he came off, I didn't for a second think he was healthy.
No, me either.
Like, I didn't look at it and say, oh, he's all good. He's 100%. He's ready to go. there's a really good chance Gronk's never going to be the same player this year.
Okay, meanwhile, we have a member of the Patriots organization who can answer for this coming up in a few minutes. In the meantime, Flowers, what's his story?
I heard Zoe talking about it that, you know, they've had this flu that's been rampant throughout the locker room over the last few weeks.
No problem then.
But he had been practicing. Today he wasn't there. I'm not that worried about it.
Okay, they didn't. All right, fine.
Injury report's out later today.
Nothing to see there.
Right.
Fine, if it's the flu, we're fine. Give me the thing on Kareem Hunt. Now, what happened?
So this video has been released by TMZ. Kareem Hunt can be seen arguing with a 19-year-old woman. He shoves her. She hits him in the face. He pushes another man into the woman, then kicks her while she's crouching low to the ground. It's ugly. I mean, but the thing is, this happened apparently back in February, so I refuse to believe that the league or the team didn't know about this.
Keep going.
But he straight up bull rushes her and knocks her down. Like, it's bad.
And two people, in fact. So this is the part that Murray was talking about where he kicks her is the very end of it. Now you're just seeing that for the first time. But, I mean, it's not good. It's not good. I mean, if you're the Chiefs.
Like, so you say I just saw a little snip there. It's not as.
Well, the Ray Rice video was pretty bad. I mean, he punched her in the face and then dragged her out.
So it doesn't rise to that level.
I don't think it's as bad as Ray Rice, but it's not good.
Kicks her.
Yeah. Yep. Kicked her.
And he has a history of domestic violence as well, correct? Am I thinking about the word? Yeah, right? It's Kareem Hunt.
Or is it Tyreek Hill?
Oh, Tyreek Hill. That's what I'm thinking about.
Tyreek Hill.
Hard to keep him apart in that league. So, all right, what do they do? What does Roger do there? I mean, I know what you're rooting for out there, Patriots fans. We got to be strong on domestic violence, right?
Windows open in the AFC.
Yeah, and I know what you're thinking.
So how long did the Ray Rice thing take? Do you remember?
Oh, a year. He first gave him two, then the video came out and he gave him six. What, Tucker? I don't mean a year, but it was months in between. It was... I thought you shook your head at me like I had it wrong.
Oh.
I usually do. The Rice thing happened. There was no video. And I thought it was in the off season that Goodell brought him in. Rice admitted to it, gave him two games. Then subsequently, weeks or months after, the video came out. And then, of course, Roger, you know, all the bleep hit the fan. And then it became a six-game ban or a life, you know, whatever. And so that played out over time. But that was so mishandled and such an absolute debacle for the league and mankind, frankly, that the league now, like, they can't underplay this one.
No, there's no way they can underplay it.
Well,
no,
especially in a week in which the Washington Redskins signed Reuben Foster, who now has three domestic violence charges.
And Doug
him.
Williams, who works for the Redskins, then comes out and says domestic violence is small potatoes.
Small potatoes.
Ay vey.
Stupid league can't stay out of its own way.
Well, Doug Williams isn't the league's fault. Like, they can't control the mouse of every, you know, guy who works for every team. But, I mean, on balance, you're right. The league can't get out of its way. Fine.
My question was, how swiftly, typically, does Goodell react to this stuff?
Not that swiftly.
It happened 9 months ago.
No, but the video, right? Now the video's
well, now,
out.
Yeah.
Okay, but the video's out. Now he's going to be forced to act. Like, what
was there a police report originally? Was there anything ever reported about this?
So I believe there was, because they knew about the incident.
They did.
The league knew about the incident, but there was no video. Well, now there's video. So, and as we learned in the Ray Rice case.
That's when the bleep hits the fan.
Absolutely, because now people can actually see it.
So what are they going to do? Take one of the most important players from the Super Bowl, from a Super Bowl favorite off the field with six games to go?
I'm willing to bet this one gets tangled up in red tape and addressed during the offseason. That's what I would bet.
Oh, and I don't want to hear the crying from you people. I'm already stealing myself the crying and the caterwauling that are going to happen if this guy's somehow allowed to play, which he might be. I don't even know what the right thing is right now. I got to see that whole video, but Lord, I don't know. So there we go with the NFL. We have that on the table as well. We'll have Bob Sosi in next here on Felger and Mazz. Wrestling tickets coming up this hour, so stick around for all of it.
You're listening to Felger and Mazz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
Down 7-0 with Gordon split right. Three receivers left, including Gronkowski. Four-man rushes. Brady takes the snap. Late pressure, a throw down the middle for Gronk. Open! Lunges! Makes the catch! Absorbs the contact! And falls in the end zone for a touchdown! Patriots!
It's a way you get the big boy back! And Brady, in the teeth of a blitz, he hangs in there, and it's reminiscent of Denver years ago, where he just waits and waits on the tight end to clear, and it's Gronkowski finally going vertical. Look at him. That's what he needs to get the confidence going, man. Man, he's feeling it, and Brady took a shot right in the teeth.
It's time for Hot Sports Takes with Bob Sosa.
Come join us. Yes, let's party with Sosie. Smoking Bob Sosie. Smoking Bob Sosie and his hot, hot takes. Sizzling Bob Sosie. Scorching Bob Sosie with his hot, hot takes.
Yeah! I'm telling you, Robert. He does it every week, and it gets me every time. It really does.
He's now drawing an audience on the other side of the glass here in the lobby.
Yeah, no, that really happened out there. It did.
It did.
Bob Sosie, the voice of the New England Patriots in our Town Fair Tire studios. We play the Gronkowski touchdown because we were just discussing the Gronkowski on the injury report, off the injury report. What the hell do you think is going on there?
You know, before I answer that question, you guys don't mind a little cross-promotion? We've talked about the podcast recently.
Oh, God.
The Bobcast.
No, that is the single most promoted item on this station.
Yeah. I think it's important to interject right here on the subject of a tight end, some commentary that came up in my last conversation. You know, I heard some of the comments you guys were making early in the week, in particular about how, you know, for example, the thought that the play-action game can improve if you run the ball well and how that might be cliched. So I had a podcast interview scheduled with a former Patriots tight end.
Russ Francis.
Local and national renown. And I asked
him. Does he challenge players, Bob, early in the week?
James, do you mind a little sound right here?
Love sound. Give me more sound.
Let's talk about the importance of a running game, even in this day and age, of a quarterback and passing league.
How instrumental was having a running attack for Brady on Sunday, and how important will it be the rest of the season when you consider weather, his age, and also the complementary effects of play-action passing with the running game?
You know, firstly, anybody who says that, you know, we know it's a passing league, but not to have a running game is an absolute buffoon. Yeah, that would be Michael Felder. He thinks you could just put anybody back there. I mean, he thinks it's youth football where, you know, you could take any 10-year-old and throw him in the backfield and he could just, you know, run around the edge. But, you know, that's just coming from a guy who hasn't played football since, you know, maybe Pee Wee or Pop Warner.
Now, I was a pretty good high school player, Wiggy.
Yeah. Wiggy. Yep. Did he have to call you? He works in the building, for crying out loud.
And you still get him on a bad cell phone. Right. Exactly. You can walk down the hall.
Wiggy.
For that. I just love Wiggy and his young children idea.
Get any 7-year-old, give him a bow and arrow, train 8 hours, 10 hours a day. You know, after, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, kid's going to be good.
So there you go.
Yeah,
Listen, that's the Bobcast. The Bob Sosie podcast. The most
Do heavily, you challenge players, Bob?
The most heavily promoted thing on this station. Your thoughts on Gronkowski?
I heard the conversation just as I was coming into the building, and I think it could be one of those situations where it's going to be on again, off again. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's had so many physical problems, in particular with the back, and he played 69 snaps last week. He's involved heavily in the running game, and he certainly was physical in that respect. He's mauled down the field. I know where you're going to go next. Why was he off the injury report? Maybe, again, it's just something that flares up in practice. It's going to be a chronic issue. I don't know. I hate to speculate about injuries, but I think this may very well be the new norm, considering the wear and tear he's been through, and in particular when you're talking about back and ankle. You know, so many guys in this league, they say you're never healthy. Once you get injured, you're always dealing with something the whole season.
How do you think he looked against New York?
Again, you know, I think that...
Can I translate?
Yeah, not good.
Right?
Well, no,
local play-by-play guy ripping.
No, it's not ripping at all. I think it's consistent with what we talked about a couple of weeks ago with how he's looked. He's covered by Jamal Adams, a very good defensive player. A lot of contact, very physical. Did he get off the line as quickly as we've seen him in the past? Was he able to do some of the things that we're accustomed to seeing him do consistently? You know, not throughout the game as a pass catcher or route runner, but he was terrific in the run game.
I thought, you know, he made a sensational play. I thought the one passed him early in the game was a bit late, and that led to a hard hit that jarred the ball free. But other than that, when he got a clean release, he got a first down early in the contest, and then got the touchdown pass, which was a terrific rep, absorbing the contact from behind from Claiborne. So, yeah, again, I think it's just he looked like we could hope that Gronk would look, considering that he missed three of the last four games, and the way he was playing early in the year. You know, it goes back to Lombardi's comments and what people observed of him from very early in the season. I don't think he's worse for the wear. I think, in fact, he looked pretty good overall.
I'm going to take that one and put it in the Felger and Mads processor. That's what I'm going to do. The processed version of that response is, don't kid yourself, he's never going to be the same again. Never. And that's the part you should worry about, is that he's going to play every week and be the same player? No.
Okay, Bob, that's us. That's not you. I ask you, give me your thoughts on this week.
I think it's a very challenging game. It should be a great game. You're looking at a Vikings team that looks like it matches up very, very well with the Patriots. Good defense, especially good in the red zone and third down. I think that's where this one comes down to. It's an offense with two terrific receivers. Diggs was back at practice today, although I guess he didn't do a whole lot. They've got a terrific tight end. Thielen's outstanding, of course, especially when he lines up in the slot. And Rudolph, a tight end who's been a very reliable target through the years for them. So you're talking about two particular positions that have been problematic for the Pats, especially this season, slot receivers and their productivity, and the tight ends, as we know. Their running game has been non-existent, but they threw the ball to Cook coming out of the backfield the other day, had the 26-yard pass on a screen for a touchdown. Cousins, overall, very good numbers. My question about Kirk Cousins is the same one I think Vikings fans and media had going into the game against Green Bay. Prior to that contest, 4-12 in primetime games. He can be outstanding, and then there are times when you watch him in critical spots where he is not. And I think if the Patriots can get pressure on him, which teams have been able to do, and force him into some bad mistakes on the road, you know, I think that's a big key big part of this game is the Patriots are home. And I think that's a very important factor for them in this contest. And I think the Pats, despite the sluggish start last week, and I know it was not as impressive a win, there weren't a lot of style of points coming out of New York, but I think it was a good step in the right direction, and I think they'll be ready to play the Vikings on Sunday.
How would you defend the pass catchers of the Vikings? Like, would you play man-to-man? Does Gilmore get Diggs? What would you do?
That's a really good question, because you think about that. They're two big guys, and Diggs is a terrific player. Thielen may very well be the key for them offensively. I thought maybe early in the week that you might see Gilmore on Diggs and some combination on Thielen, but with Diggs' health status and how he looks, you know, coming out of warm-ups, maybe that plays into it. But that's a really good question, because, you know, John Jones has been primarily the nickel cornerback, the guy in the slot, and I thought he was going to have a good year. It's been a bit of a struggle of late for him. They've got Duke Dawson, the youngster. I wouldn't see them putting him on a guy like Thielen in this game, so I think it's going to be a combination of things. But probably Jason McCourty would be a guy that, you know, will have some role, whether it's with safety help or not. But I think in the case of Gilmore, you know, he's obviously the best cornerback. To me, he's probably more likely on Diggs because he's going to be outside.
Okay, so the question with me is the Vikings record. And I've seen him play the Packers a couple times primarily, so I've seen him. I mean, I should be able to answer it, but I want your take. Why aren't they better? I mean, you look, their defensive rankings are top 10 in points allowed, you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Top of the league on third down in the red zone. That offense is, they've got a high-end quarterback, and whether you think Cousins is overrated or not, the guy can play at least a little. That receiving duo is excellent. Their tight end is good. Their running back's explosive. What? You know, the coach has been around the block. Why are they only 6-4-1?
Well, they have lost to three division leaders in the NFC. They lost a game on a Thursday night in Los Angeles that was a shootout, and they played very well offensively in that game against the Rams on a short week going a long distance. They've lost to the Saints in a very competitive game, and really they did a pretty good job in that contest overall against the New Orleans offense. They've also lost to the Bears, and they lost to the Bears in Chicago in a game that I didn't think Cousins played particularly well in. And it was after that game, in fact, that Zimmer apparently had a couple of conversations with him. One of them involved whether they wanted to make changes in the offense, according to Michelle Tafoya, if they needed to simplify things. And then I think another subject that came up between Zimmer and Cousins over the last week or so was run more. He ran six times against Green Bay. He's a quarterback, and he's faced a lot of pressure, as the numbers suggest, who, from what I understand, based on people who've watched him play over the course of time in Washington and Minnesota, is very smart. Very good at diagnosing pre-snap, very mechanically sound, but almost at times, too, mechanically regimented. And if things start to break down, he doesn't necessarily navigate the pocket as well sometimes. And I think Zimmer's point was, look, if a defense doesn't ever expect you to run, you know, defense is going to – they're going to take that. They're going to love it. And so you've got to be willing to run, and not just with design plays. And he did. He ran six times against Green Bay. So I think, you know, he hasn't been he's been very productive, very good. I think the questions in Minnesota going into last week, again, if you read the reporting out of there, was has he been the quarterback that they paid all that money to, because they have gone to the playoffs in recent years with two different starting quarterbacks.
Okay, real quick.
But I think he's showing signs of that now.
Minute we have left, you've just seen the Kareem Hunt video. What do you think happens there?
Well, I just saw it for the first time a few seconds ago, and, you know, what a week for the NFL. The fact that Reuben Foster is employed right now is beyond me. And now trying to get my head around this Kareem Hunt video. You can compare it to the Ray Rice video. Certainly, you know, there are a lot of circumstances, very similar hotel room setting late at night. You know, this one to me, I think it's as bad. I do. I'm sorry. You know, I know some people don't see it that way, and I'm not. I don't have any problem with anyone who doesn't see it the same way. But I think he stays after the victim here, persisting when there is someone trying to intervene and shove him away, calm him down a bit. He even disappears from the camera's view and comes back. It's a situation where the NFL is going to have to act, I think, and come down hard. And I think they're going to have to act swiftly. They're in the midst of this tremendous year, rebounding with television ratings and entertaining football. It's a very it's a difficult choice, because the Chiefs are a big reason why the NFL is enjoying, you know, these record-setting numbers offensively and the high ratings, considering the matchups they've had already with New England and Kansas City and Los Angeles and Kansas City. You know, so I think it's a tough choice, but to me, from my point of view, and again, I'm going to look at it more, I don't know if it's pragmatic, idealistically, I think they should come down and come down hard on him, because, you know, that video to me is abhorrent.
Bob makes a good point. I mean, he does have a number of chances to walk away, and there are people that push him away, and he keeps coming back. So, look, whatever he gets, he deserves. There's no two ways about that. So, you know, the only question to me would be whether the league tries to stall here and push this into the offseason.
Suspend a guy with six games left, a Super Bowl favorite, one of the best players on the team. That doesn't make any of it right. I'm just telling you the spot. I mean, that's the spot you're in.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm probably being unrealistic. In fact, I'm sure I am.
No, I don't think so. Once the video's out and the public out, you know, that's when the rubber meets the road right there. I mean, Reuben Foster, there's no video, is there? I mean, how is Reuben Foster allowed to be playing? I mean, there's only one reason. There's no video to get outraged over. Mm-hmm. It's just a story, as bad as it is. But we always know the pictures give it a whole new life. And, you know, that's wrong in and of itself. The story should be enough. But anyway, we'll see what happens there. Bobby, I look forward to the call on Sunday.
You know, another question, too, for Andy Reid and John Dorsey. How does the organization, the Hunt family, how do they react in Kansas City? Do they impose any penalty themselves? Because this is an organization that's taken some flyers and some guys who've had troubled pasts.
Well, but this is like the Rice thing. Did he already admit to it? Has this been on the table? Because Rice did admit to it. He did.
But the Ravens really went to his defense publicly. They tried to almost craft a PR campaign to show what a great citizen he was and what a great ambassador in the community he was. And they even brought his wife out at a press conference, and you know, she more or less.
But what I'm saying is, has Kareem Hunt already told the Chiefs this happened and I did it?
Well, so there's something.
They're apparently processing this just as we are.
There's something in the story by TMZ that says team CEO Clark Hunt publicly stated in August he doubted Hunt would be suspended. So the team clearly knew about it. The league knew about it before the season started, and they didn't think that a suspension was going to result from it. There's also an item in the story on TMZ that says, and I'm clicking around trying to process a lot of this quickly, but that they couldn't decide whether it was police couldn't decide at the time whether a crime had been committed. And so that's part of the reason it hung up where it hung up.
Okay, so we'll pick this up on the other side, get your thoughts as well. Bob, thanks for coming in. We look forward to the calls. 425 game, right?
425. Hopefully my voice comes back.
Yeah? Well, you're shouting what you been shouting about?
Too much talking with Wiggy.
Yeah, that'll do it.
You need to tee proudly.
That's my problem, Jim. I need to get a cup of Bigelow tea. Thank you, sir.
Okay, so see, and don't miss the Bobcast. If you're curious when and where it is, just keep listening to the station, because we promote it every 2 minutes. The call's 425 on Sunday with Sosie and Zoe. Here's an update from Murray.
Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now, so the Hunt thing, I'm just curious. Did he already admit to it, and do they already know about it? And, like, isn't that what happened with the Ray Rice thing?
Pretty much.
He told him he did it. And so they gave him the two games. He admitted it to Goodell, which is all Goodell wants at the end of the day, is you to go in there and admit to it and kiss his ass. And he'll go easy on you. So Ray Rice did, and he did. And then the video came out, which, I mean, was ugly.
Man, oh, was brutal.
Rightful uproar about.
But was there anything?
He knocked her out in the elevator. Remember, dragged her out of there.
So did Ray Rice give a different version of events? I mean, all I'm saying is, if the video just backed up what Ray Rice already told him happened, you know, the only reason he got really rung up was because the video was out there, and yeah, then there's public outrage with the pictures.
It's so easier to sweep it under the rug if you don't actually have the visual evidence.
Of course. So that's why I'm asking with Kareem Hunt. Were they already prepared to sweep it under the rug? They know what happened. He admitted to what happened. The police have two reports, right?
Like, right. So Jimmy Stewart, again, our producer, sent us a link to a story in SI. And the SI story says that there were two police reports at the time, one of which listed Hunt as the suspect, one of which listed the woman as the suspect, because apparently she had been pounding on the hotel room door. A woman came out and, you know, there was a fight and blah, blah, blah between two women, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then the thing, you know, and then Hunt got involved. So, you know, there were no charges filed, or according to the story on TMZ, police could not determine whether a crime had been committed.
Okay, so we'll see how this all plays out. You want to weigh in, you can. Here's Steve and Bill Ricker with a thought on NFL running backs. Hi, Steve.
Yes, hey, listen. Falgo, this one's for you. With running backs, you're totally right. You don't take them that early, no doubt. You definitely beat a dead horse. But let me ask you this.
Yep.
Right now, would you trade Saquon Barkley to Sam Darnold? Because I guarantee you, when the Giants do end up getting a young quarterback, he excels better than any of the young quarterbacks nowadays. Like Jared Goff, you know, has Gurley.
Disagree.
And Mahomes got Hunt.
I disagree. I think Sam Darnold or whatever quarterback ends up with the Giants is going to be dependent on their coaching and who the coach is and what the system is and how they work together. And they'll figure the running back thing out as they go. I disagree. I don't think Barkley's going to help he'll help him a little bit, but it pales in comparison to what the coach is going to do and the kind of system and the kind of nurturing he's going to get from an offensive-minded, quarterback-minded coach. Period. That's by far the most important thing.
I mean, is there a better example of that in the league right now than Goff?
Well, so someone would
I mean,
say,
now look, if the guy sucks, the guy sucks. No coach is going to turn him into a player.
Todd Gurley opened it up for Goff, which is just backwards and antiquated and a cliche. It's not what happened. He got a coach. They loaded the crap out of the receiving group and got a real NFL passing game. Whether the running back was there or not, with those things in place, they'd be good and they'd be moving the ball, which they are.
But you acknowledge that if Darnold can't play, no coach is going to matter.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. But I'll tell you what, if he can play and he gets the wrong coaching, he's porked. Absolutely. You can be amazing. If you're stuck in a bad situation, it's hard. We've got Jake in Stowe with the Bruins talk. Go ahead, Jake.
Hey guys. I have a quick comment for you, Felger. I think you hate Danton Heinen because he's a poor man's young version of Louis Erickson. He forechecks and backchecks well. But he doesn't have much speed and he can't finish.
Jake, let me ask you something.
And another, yes.
Are you at your computer? Or do you know this? Does Danton Heinen have a good Corsi?
I have no clue.
Okay. Because your comment line says Danton Heinen is Louis Erickson, and I'll tell you when
I said he's a young poor man's version. His game, and I know you watch him play. They play a very similar game.
Yeah, I agree. They don't do anything.
I think Louis Erickson was better.
They're both useless. They're both useless. I really started to hate Danton Heinen when I heard DJ Bean say the other night he liked the way he plays. He plays a quiet game. And I said, oh, great. Here we go again. Because DJ was a huge Louis Erickson guy. Louis Erickson played a very quiet game. Very quiet. Silent most nights. But he had a good Corsi. whatever the F that is.
His Fenwick is zero, whatever that is.
Does that mean good or bad? I would guess that means average, but what do I know? I don't follow Fenwick.
Sometimes a zero is good, like ERA.
Right. So I don't know. Is that a good Fenwick?
His PDO, even strength, is 95.3, whatever that is.
What's that, Tucker? You go to Harvard. Can you? What is that? You know what that is? You don't even know.
PDO.
Playing down to opponent.
So, yes, Danton Heinen is starting to remind me of Louis Erickson. He's out there all the time. They like him. Some people must like him somewhere, but I really almost never notice him. Very quiet game. Very quiet.
He must have like...
It's an odd compliment.
He must have spongy skates.
No, very...
So quiet.
Yeah, exactly. Derek in Foxborough on our jersey retirement stuff. Hi, Derek.
Yeah, you guys are kind of mocking the Celtics for retiring so many numbers.
Really?
But when you've won 17 championships, you're going to have a lot of numbers retired. A lot of players contributed to those.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And what's wrong with rewarding their contributions?
It's ridiculous.
It cheapens it. But you got guys like Kyrie now saying his goal is to have his number retired by the Celtics. I mean, so players still, it means something to them still.
Of course. Why wouldn't it? It's free publicity. It's like something to brand. Of course these players want to go up there. What does that mean? To put your Celtics green underwear back on. That's not a Celtics thing. That's like they get to do a whole promotional campaign on getting their number retired. It's not about the Celtics. Good God. It cheapens it when you start putting sixth men up there, which they did with, what was it, Ramsey? Who was the sixth man that they put up there?
I think it was Frank Ramsey.
Whatever.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So that's, you cheapen it. Russell, Cousy, Bird, sixth man Frank Ramsey. Like it cheapens it for Russell and Bird. That's why. That's why it bothers me. Real quick, Kim and Lynn, what do you got?
Yes, I was wondering how you felt about the Deontay Wilder Fury fight this weekend.
Love it, Kim.
I'm really excited. I know it's not Joshua, but I'm hoping this is a step in the right direction.
Okay, Deontay Wilder and Fury, $75.
Tyson Fury.
$75, Kim. You gonna spring for it?
I think I am. I've been going back and forth, but God, heavyweight boxing. I'm so dying for it.
Kim, okay. You know what you do? Invite some people over, charge them $10 a head.
Done. Done. How many people will it take to get your money back? And you can answer that later. It's an agenda-free Friday, so we should hit on this. Because you know that we are big Deontay Wilder fans. We've been rooting for the heavyweight division. There's two big guys circling each other for a big fight. And I'm telling you, I know I told you to watch Anthony Joshua like 6 months ago, whenever that was, and that was a dog of a fight. Who did he fight? Joe Parker?
I think it was Joe Parker.
Joe Parker.
Smoking Joe Parker.
And it was a total snooze of an awful fight, and I'm sorry, but I'm telling you what.
And Joe Parker was undefeated.
Watch Deontay Wilder. He is worth the money, and this thing this weekend is going to be worth the money. In fact, I'm going to spend a couple minutes on it.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
You know, a lot of people don't think that I can fight in the inside, but I had a surprise of my son. My grandma told me a long time ago I was anointed by God, and it shows each and every time. Now I can say there's no man that stepped in the ring that I haven't put on their ass, baby.
I love this guy. Deontay Wilder. For those of you who want the fight game back, and I'm on this, we've been on this thing. We've been on a little bit of a mission here to bring boxing back, at least to our little world.
I mean, I told you, I want to see Wilder Joshua.
Okay, so I'm trying to bring it back, meaning just in my own little world, so I can talk about it and we can talk about it and make it part of the show. Because I used to love the fight game. I loved prize fighting. I think it's been a nothing. It's been a zero for decades, really, because I need heavyweights. I need big men pounding each other. The middleweight divisions do nothing for me, especially when it's Floyd Mayweather, who's a bad guy who never hurts anyone to begin with, meaning no one in the ring, unfortunately. Outside the ring is a different story, but in the ring, his fights are a dud, and I just don't get off on watching little guys point each other. I want to see big men hit each other and go down. There's a string of heavyweights who do this now. Deontay Wilder is it. He's an American. He's 40-0 with 39 knockouts. So pretty much every time he fights, someone goes down and someone goes down hard. Sometimes it's him.
Right. The last fight with him, he went down.
Okay. He is 6'7". He is wiry muscle. He is a hoot to watch in the ring because he's a little raw and all over the place. He's
gangly.
He swings from everywhere, which, like, I think as soon as he fights someone who really knows what he's doing, he's going to get his ass knocked out. But I hope he doesn't because I love him. He's American. He's outside the ring, he's a blast. His grandma told him he was anointed by God. I mean, he'll tell you in one breath he can go inside and hit you inside, but my grandmother was, I had been anointed by God, my grandma said, and now there's no man who's coming to the ring who I haven't put on their ass, baby.
Damn. You know, a lot of people don't think that I can fight an inside, but I had to surprise them and show them. My grandma told me a long time ago I was anointed by God.
Anointed by God.
It shows each and every time. Now I can say there's no man that stepped in the ring that I haven't put on their ass, baby.
I love how he just kind of drops that in
there. Dropping it. What a segue, you know? God,
yeah, a lot of people don't think I can fight on the inside. And
I'm the Messiah.
Yeah, my grandmother told me I was the chosen one. So, when I was in school.
So anyway, he's 40-0, 39 knockouts. He's fighting Tyson Fury, who's a Brit, on Saturday night. It's a $75 buy, which is, boy,
real steep.
That's a big number for two guys that most people haven't heard of. But I'm going to pay it. Tyson Fury is also undefeated. What'd you have his record at, Maz?
He is 27-0 with 19 knockouts.
Tyson Fury is 6'9". This guy is giant. This guy's a giant. He's massive. His weight's not listed here. But he's 6'9".
So I was talking to Billy Lanny, the fight doctor, about this the other day, and Billy told me that I think this guy was pushing 3 bills and had to lose a ton of weight. He was like, he was 3 balloons.
So apparently he also might have drug problems or he had a PED thing. He's got a little bit of a checkered past, which we're not gonna hold against him. It's the fight game. We'll take what we can get.
He's a boxer.
You're exactly right. He's a fighter. So Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, Saturday night, 75 beans. That is a big ask. But so what was going on here is that Wilder's chasing Anthony Joshua, who has a split belt. He's an undefeated fighter in Britain as well, who is a real legit, like, technical, good boxer.
Polished.
Never mind, massive himself and hugely powerful.
6'6".
He's 6'6". All these guys are giant. Wilder's 6'7".
They could all be goalies.
They're giant. And they all hit the crap out of each other. They're all like, I don't know what Joshua's record is, but Wilder, every time he fights, someone goes down.
I think Joshua has, like, all but one knockout, too. He's another one.
And, you know, I think Joshua's had, like, one boring fight, and I asked you to watch it the last time.
Smoking Joe Parker.
It was him and Joe Parker, and they didn't touch each other. It pissed me off because I'm, like, pumping these guys up, and then they go out and do nothing. It's like, if I want to do that, I go watch the Canelo fights, which bore me to tears, or the Mayweather fights, which bore me to tears. No, these guys go at it. So you've heard us talk about it before. Saturday night's another big one. Joshua keeps running from Wilder. He keeps running from him. And eventually, he's got to fight him. We thought they were going to come together like in this last year, right?
Right. They were supposed to be this fall, allegedly, and that didn't happen. And by the way, that fight that you angled everyone to watch, the Parker-Joshua, was the only fight of Joshua's career that did not end in a knockout. He's 22-0 now with 21 knockouts.
So wouldn't you know it, the one I told you to watch was the one boring one. But 99% of the time when these guys get in the ring, they're throwing haymakers and guys are getting hurt and they're going down. It's entertaining, or what I deem to be entertaining. And they have personalities. Like the Brit, the Anthony Joshua, is like a dick. Like I don't like him because he's got that British accent and he's got like, he's snobby and British, and, you know,
you don't like him because he's dodging Wilder.
And he sounds all proper, and he's dodging Wilder. Yes, exactly. Wilder's just, you know, street-talking American, like, I'm anointed by God. I don't know if you knew this. And so I'm rooting for Wilder. We're getting American on top of it all. And so those two coming together is going to be the next big mega fight, okay? If Joshua will ever fight him, Joshua and Wilder. But Wilder has to win on Saturday night to keep that sort of thing alive. I mean, they'll fight eventually anyway. I just hope boxing doesn't screw it up and wait till they're both past their prime like Mayweather and Pacquiao.
So Billy Lanny knows this, but I think one of the things Joshua wanted was for Wilder to fight Fury. And then he would said he would fight because he feels like that was the chain of command.
Oh, whatever.
You know, so Billy might know more about that than I
either
do.
Way.
But I look at because again, Fury's undefeated. So no, you want to fight? You got to fight him first. I'm number one. You fight him, and then you fight me.
I just think he's ducking him. Is what
he's totally ducking him.
But either way, it's got to happen eventually. It's going to happen probably in Wales, where Anthony Joshua fights in front of crowds of 100,000 people. Like, it's bananas over there. And so it's good. If you've invested a little bit in the heavyweight division, it's got a little something going on there, as we've told you about. And I'll tell you again, I'm not telling you to spend 75 beans, because that's too much. That's too much. All I'm saying is I want to guarantee that the fight's going to be good. Because they almost all, and when I mean good, like, I'm not telling you it's the sweet science. I'm telling you these guys swing from their asses. And
Wilder especially.
They're fun. They're fun fights.
he's a brawler. He is an absolute, that's all he is. He throws every punch with the idea of knocking someone out.
Just his get up coming into the ring. He's the Bronze Bomber, right?
Yeah. He wears the mask. Yeah.
He wears this S&M Max mask. Like, I don't even know how to pronounce it. Or how to describe it, but he wears like this mask getup going into the ring.
You think it's an ode to the rapper MF Doom is what he's trying to do there with that mask. But I know you're not going to.
I went S&M, you went rapper. I don't know.
MF Doom.
Okay, either way. There's your boxing minute. We were going to talk to Chris Mannix, but he stiffed us. So there you go. There it is from us.
MF Gasper coming up next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.